One of our favorites, Dr. Winning, is back. She is on the line. It is The Vet Is In. Dr. Winning, welcome back to KFGO Radio.
Well, thanks for having me. What a great day to be here.
We have people texting in about their dog or cat names because we were talking about, we also want the names of your pets, you know, text in with all the information we need about how old they are or what breed they are, but then also, you know, text in their name. We have a boxer we adopted. His name is TKO. Get it. It's a good one. Someone else said they have a 3-year-old chocolate lab named Wrigley. I'm a Chicago Cubs fan, so I named her after their home field. That's cute. I bet you see so many good names in your veterinary practice, Dr. Winning.
You know, it's so funny that you say that because this morning we have, every morning we have what's called rounds here, and we just go over the patients that are in the hospital so everybody knows who's here and what they're here for. And there's one dog named Donna that's here today. She's so cute. I'm like, what a great name, Donna.
Donna.
I love it.
I love that too. My dog named Cab, it says, is a male Shih Tzu. What is the best way to stop him from killing the grass when we let him out to go to the bathroom? Oh, I can't believe this is the first question we got, but we get it often, don't we, Dr. Winning?
We do. And, you know, there are products that are out there marketed specifically for pets' urine killing the grass. And what I want owners to start thinking about is those products generally affect the pH of the urine. And so when you start altering the pH of the urine, you can predispose your dogs to crystallurea or a condition where they start getting crystals in their urine because it's not a natural pH for them. So just be careful. You might be sacrificing your dog's health for the benefit of your lawn. So be careful about that. Be very selective in what you try to do. Talk to your veterinarian about it. The best thing that you can do is when your pet goes outside to potty, have a designated area where you don't care if the grass dies and teach your pet to go in that area, or have a bucket of water ready to just dilute the urine over that area when they go.
Dr. Winning, have you seen any success with the pheromone-based pee spot training aids? So they have the little fire hydrant that has the scent in it that draws them to do their business in a specific area?
Well, we know pheromones can play an important role in dogs' behavior. So it makes sense that that is something that could work. So I, even though I haven't had personal experience with it, I do know breeders that use like even the mats that have pheromone on them just to indicate that, yes, this is a place for you to urinate. Now, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So it just because you have pheromones in that area doesn't mean that your dog is always going to urinate in that area. It can urinate in other spots too.
Yeah, it seems to me to be one of those, the more vigilant you are in training your pooch to go in a specific area, the better success rate you're going to have.
You are so correct. That is, training is key in so many of these problems. So I agree with you completely.
Someone said, what about your dog's stool is killing the grass?
I have never ran into that.
I haven't either. We have two dogs and there are a lot of urine spots. But I don't think we ever get it from the dog's stool.
No, that doesn't quite, to me that, I would want to visit, if that were my client, I would want to visit with them a little bit more about that because it just doesn't quite make complete sense.
Again, I guess maybe we can go this route. Why does my dog eat poop? Which we get this question all the time too.
Yeah. And you know what? Nobody really knows why dogs eat stool. Now, I personally have noticed it tends to be, in my experience, more female dogs that do that as opposed to males. And that might relate back to, you know, mother maternal instincts. But for the most part, pick up after your pet the supplements that are supposed to help prevent your pet from consuming fecal matter. really don't, they're not predictably reliable. So, in fact, I haven't seen any product that works for that. So just pick up your dog's stool after they go and your problem is solved.
Let's talk to Bev. Bev, you're on the air with Dr. Winning. Go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Hey, my daughter has two cats, and she feeds them Buffalo Blue or Blue Buffalo. Anyway, her one cat does not eat a lot, you know, so she doesn't finish her meal. Well, the other one then eats hers and eats the other ones too, and she's getting too big. So she's wondering if I could find out what kind of food would be better for the two of them.
There are a lot of different food options out there, but the problem is specifically for the conditions of your pet, there should be a vet involved to determine what body condition score the one is compared to the other. I will say that I do like the microchip feeders because even though they have some costs associated with them, your cat would wear the microchip, or there's collars, there's microchip detection feeders, but let's talk about the collar. So your cat would wear that collar with that chip in the collar, and it only opens up that feeder in its pre-measured amount. Now, with the other cat, if that cat isn't eating all of its food at a meal and mm-hmm. is of good body weight, I would say mm-hmm. that cat is getting fed too much. And that cat's body is saying, this is what my, you know, metabolism to maintain a good healthy weight. And any more that cat is turning away from, like we all should do. Mm-hmm. But I would really argue that maybe depending on the body condition of the cats that's not finishing, maybe might be getting a little bit too much to eat to begin with. And so just taking away some of that might help solve the problem. But of course, okay. you want a vet to look at these mm-hmm. kitties and just make sure, you know, they're in good health otherwise, and rate their body condition in general.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bev. Mm-hmm. We appreciate it. If you have any questions for Dr. Winning, our phone lines are open now, 237-5948, 800-880-5346. You can also text in to 35270.
Yeah, at the 702 Communications Text Club, and one that is going to be beneficial for me, too. A five-year-old Great Dane that is urinating in the home. So I've recently started trying to train my dog to be out and about at home for short periods of time. And a couple of those longer periods, I've had some urinating in the home problems, which is difficult to train because if you don't catch them, there's not much. I don't know what you can do if you don't catch the dog in the act.
You are correct. If you're going to do any kind of punishment, then you want to be able to catch them in the act. And we also, I'm just going to toss this out there since we're talking about punishment. You know, make sure the punishment is appropriate. Rubbing their noses in it, no. Giving a loud no while they're in the act of urinating is okay. Hitting them, not okay. All right. So usually what I'm going to do, if they're doing something wrong that I don't want them to do, I startle them, get their attention, and focus them, you know, to an area where they can urinate. So that's number one. Now, as far as urinating in the house, there can be many different reasons for that. Off the top of my head, the first thing that you're going to want to do is make sure your pet doesn't have a medical condition that's causing them to do that. And that can run the gamut. So anything from a urinary tract infection to an endocrine problem, those are all possibilities. The other thing is behavioral. So what if you rule out all those medical conditions? The next thing is, okay, is this a behavioral condition? And I would say for a lot of animals, yeah, there is a behavioral component, and it's usually anxiety related to separation from their owner. If they are most comfortable in their kennel, that's the place to put them. It saves you the anxiety of having to clean up urine when you get home, and it, you know, is a nice little bedroom for them to feel comfortable in and secure while you're away.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
It's a tough thing to try to, because how old? 5 years old, I feel like they've already got their, I don't know, their tendencies down, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, right. And so then you have to start thinking, why now all of a sudden? Has this been something that we've been predisposed to from the very beginning, or is this something brand new? And if it is brand new, why now? And that makes me think more about medical conditions, actually, than anything else.
Can they just start from the beginning and start kind of potty training in the way that they did at the very start and see how that goes?
You can. However, again, if there's an underlying, again, if we've ruled out the medical condition part of it, if there's a behavioral component, we have to figure out what that behavioral component is. And if it's anxiety related, then I start thinking about medication.
I have
and training, of course.
Right. I have 2 3-year-old Catahoula leopard dogs named Grim and Mars. They started chewing their paws. Could it be allergies?
You know, I was just going to talk about that today. I think that's so timely because we do see a lot of dogs this time of year coming in and they're licking their paws. And why are they doing it? And there can be a lot of different reasons. For example, they could have some sort of injury, a torn toenail. So in that dog, that those dogs that are licking their paws a lot, I would be looking for, is there any grass seeds stuck in there? Are there torn toenails? Did they get a bug bite? Or, you know, bee stings happen a lot on the feet of dogs. So look for that. The other thing, are your dogs on parasite prevention? And is it appropriate prevention? Have a conversation with your veterinarian. Is this working for me? Because fleas and ticks can cause bites that itch, pain. Some dogs will have pain in their feet. Sometimes, again, the skin will be irritated. Look for those weed seeds. We see a lot of weed seeds in between the toes this time of year. Grooming some dogs. My sister just called me the other day, and she's like, my dog doesn't want to walk on the grass. It was every time it's groomed. And I said, well, just stop having them trim in between the bottoms of the feet, the toes. And so stuff like that we should be thinking about. And then, of course, as you had indicated, food allergies, inhalant allergies. This is probably the most common cause this time of year of foot licking, honestly. And so what I would do in those circumstances, if you're seeing red, moist, irritated skin in between the toes, I would get that dog into the veterinarian, because we're going to need to determine, is this something that we can handle with over-the-counter remedies, keeping it clean, maybe some antihistamines, some topical products, or is this something where we need a prescription medication because this dog is miserable?
We have more questions coming in to our text club. Keep them coming. We've got a border collie named Skyla, a boxer named Gino, and a lab named Miles. Those are all ahead here on It Takes Two. The vet is in until 2 o'clock. Dr. Doreen Winning will be taking all of your pet questions until 2 o'clock. Okay, we've got a lot of questions piling up for you, Dr. Winning. We've got a lot of dogs in the waiting room. Okay, we have a female border collie named Skyla. She keeps chasing shadows. Any advice on how to make her stop? She's 11 months old.
So this is a common problem with border. I don't even want to call it a problem because they have such active minds that they need stuff to do. So in this circumstance, what I would truly do with that dog is make sure she has something constructive to do. And I would do training. I would do find activities, teach her new things, frisbee, you know, sit stays. I mean, start focusing on some behavioral training that can do good as she is developing her mind furthermore in the future. So learning to respond to you and stopping when you say stop. And so training, get her to a dog class, get her to do fun things. Some border collies like frisbee. I mean, there's tons of different things to do. So check into that.
We have a 6-year-old boxer named Gino we're going to get to in just a minute. But Teresa's on the line now. Teresa, you're on with Dr. Winning. Go ahead.
Hi. Can puppy and dogs have toys with squeakers in it? Or is that not a good idea?
A lot of dogs like the squeakers. However, you have to be careful because some dogs will destroy the toy, as I'm sure you know. They'll destroy it and get the squeaker out, and then that's when it needs to be taken away. And if there are different squeaky toys that you can get that are more durable, and we've talked about those before. But, I think they're fine. You know, it's kind of fun for them to, it's the prey drive that they have, that they like those squeakers.
Well, yeah, because but another vet said, well, no, because he's removed so many of them through surgery, you know, that they've always swallowed them. And that's why he says, do not get a squeaker. And I thought, you know, we've always had squeaker with our dogs, and that's, I've never heard, you know, like you said, if it starts coming apart, grab it and throw it away. So, yeah, or take out the squeaker when it's, if he's tearing it apart. So, yeah, because, yeah, they love it.
Yeah, and I think it's important that mental stimulation, again, is important for them. So it's all, it kind of goes back to just monitoring your dog and know what they're doing and what they're capable of. So yeah, keep track of them, watch them, supervise.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks, Teresa. Okay, let's get back to the text club here. This 6-year-old boxer named Gino, is there a lot of, there is a lot of different dog foods available. We have fed him a very recognizable brand that has been very affordable. His weight is good. He's active and healthy. Is it okay to keep him on a certain food if they are having no problems?
I would say within reason, yes. I mean, there are some dog foods that their ingredients fluctuate so much based on commodity prices, and there's a reason they try to make it economical for people, and that's great if that's what you can handle financially for your pet. However, I like consistency in diet. I don't think you have to spend, you know, buy a $200 bag of dog food to get the results you want, and in fact, I would discourage that. I think, for example, Purina Dog Chow is a fine dog food, and there have been many dogs that have lived long, healthy lives on that. So I think, no, you don't have to go out and change their dog's food necessarily if they are doing are healthy and active and look great. One thing I would look for is the AAFCO statement, AAFCO. And if they have an AAFCO statement on the bag stating they've been through testing trials, feeding trials, you're fine. Keep your dog on that food.
There you go. I have an 11-month-old lab. Oh, I think we got to get to a break. Okay, when we come back, there's an 11-month-old lab named Miles. He has lost his chest hair. Okay, we'll talk about that. A 5-year-old Irish Shedder. A setter, Chesapeake Bay Retriever. Oh my gosh. Okay. So much more. Speaking of dog feet. Okay. Oh, smelly dog feet. Okay. We'll get to those too. We have lots of questions coming into our text club, Dr. Winning. You're going to be a busy gal for the next half hour.
Great.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll get back to those questions and more. You can always call in as well. It is The Vet Is In on KFGO. The Vet Is In on KFTO. Dr. Doreen Winning from Valley Vet on Main Avenue in Fargo is with us, taking all of your pet questions. Back to the text club we go. Okay, we have an 11-month-old lab named Miles. That's where we were at. He has lost his chest hair on his breastbone. Breastbone. Okay.
Breastbone. Middle of his chest.
I gotcha. About 2 inches by 6 inches. Any ideas why?
So I'm assuming that's on the bottom of the chest when they're talking about the breastbone.
I'm assuming and that too.
I would think they mean the sternum area. Yeah. Right down
so
the middle.
So that's a pressure point for dogs and Labradors too. Some of them can be quite deep chested, meaning their rib cage is big and they've got a lot of volume there. And so that makes the pressure point all that more prominent. And so, yes, that's fairly common that would get a callus there. And the hair would not be there. Now, are there other things? Yes, of course. And so we start thinking parasites, you know, different things, you know, that can cause hair loss would be fungal infections, bacterial infections, that kind of thing. So it's important that a veterinarian take a look at that to make sure there's nothing that needs to be treated and that truly is just a pressure point callus.
I feel like our lab doesn't have any hair
there
either.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, mine is fairly thin, and you're right about the barrel-chested labs. There's a lot of mass up front there.
Yeah. Mm. A 5-year-old Irish setter has recently just started nipping at people's hands when they show up at our house. Will having him neutered solve this aggression? Any other advice?
I think, okay, neutering is a place to start, but it might not be the be-all end-all. So So we have to start thinking about behavioral modification techniques. And so learning that people coming to the house is a good thing and not a conflicting behavior, anxiety-ridden behavior-inducing event. So thinking about people coming to the house, having a treat bag outside the house, they give the dog a treat as they walk in. Or also having your dog go lay down, teaching them to go lay down or go to their kennel when people come to the house. So behavior training is important. Teach your dog what to do, not what not to do.
Good advice. That's why we pay you the big bucks. She's giving her time for free.
Yeah, right.
We have a Chesapeake Bay Retriever that rehomed when he was three. When the original owners went to get him, they were in an accident on their way home, so they called him Crash, and we stuck with that name. Oh, that's cute. Okay, sorry, that was just a dog name story, I guess. Speaking of dog feet, why do they always smell like corn chips? Our dog shares the bed, and I thought there was a bag of Doritos in the room. Nope, just dog feet.
So we've talked about this one before, too. Dogs sweat. That's where they have sweat glands, is in between the toes of their feet. And so, yes, moisture can build up. They can get yeast that builds up in there. And, yes, they can get what we would consider armpit odor in us is foot odor in dogs. So think of it that way. What can you do about it? Keep them clean and dry.
So I want to take over with my own question, if that's okay. Miss Abigail, our lab is, how old is she now? Seven or six, seven, eight. I think she's eight
she
now.
She is some age, possibly.
No, okay, she's seven. I believe she's seven.
She's somewhere she's seven. In between 0 and 100.
I think she's seven. I think I have that right. Maybe my husband is listening and he'll text me. I think she's seven. Anyway, the poor girl's just getting old. You know, she's getting a little gray in her face. And when she was at the lake last time, she did a lot of playing in the water, some chasing, some running, and then she couldn't walk for the next week. I mean, she can walk. She's able to walk, but really stiff and sore on that one left leg. I mean, hobbling around, not walking on it for about 3 or 4 days, and then would put a little more pressure on it all of the time. And now she'll walk on it, but I still, when she's laying down for long periods of time and she goes to get up, I see her hobble. Arthritis, something else? Should we have it looked at?
I would have it looked at. Chances are it's arthritis. But we start thinking about what if it's a ligament injury or something that we can correct.
Right.
And so, yes, I would have her looked at. And also, I always like, even with my oldest dog, Doobie, I carry around carprofen or Rimadyl all the time. No matter where he goes, I always have carprofen nearby.
So do you use that on a daily basis or only when he's doing a lot of activities or only when he's showing symptoms? When do you decide?
There are two ways. One, when I know he's going to be active. For example, if we're going out to the farm for a 4-day weekend, yep, he's just automatically on it. I want to see that dog moving easily, not struggling to get upstairs. Okay. The other time is if I see that he is sore. For example, at home here in Fargo, he's pretty sedentary, but if I see him get up and he's kind of gimping along one leg or another, I'll give it to him. And I've got dachshunds. So, I mean, let's talk about IBDD or disc disease. I mean, geez, it's important for me to have something, some sort of pain relief all the time. Yeah,
it's so tough when they just, I think she just thinks she's still a puppy. And I honestly think it's when she just goes from, you know, 0 to 60 in a second. There's no warm up for her. It's like, if I could just teach her how to warm up her joints a little bit before she just took off running, but she just takes off like she's 10 months old still.
Well, and, you know, you bring to mind a point about supplements. When should we start thinking about supplements? Is it just an age thing? Oh, when they hit six, I'm going on a supplement. Do we keep them on it from the time they're a puppy? Or do we use it as an adult? And I would say my dogs, all of my dogs, when they come to my house, usually they're adults, but I will give them fish oil. So they're automatically on Nordic Naturals the minute they walk through my door, period. I have them on supplements like glucosamine chondroitin. You know, once they hit seven, I probably would put them on that. And there are a lot of other supplements out there. I think of like for cognitive decline. When do you start supplementing for that? I put my dogs on Purina Bright Minds because I want them. I started noticing some little symptoms in Doobie where he was a little bit confused about certain things. So he's automatically on Bright Minds. And, you know, there are supplements like Senolife that you can use. So it's important to keep track of your pet mentally and physically. And you can start supplements with the help of your veterinarian determining a good time for your pet to be on different supplements.
Okay, that's good advice. I'm going to start looking into the supplements for my pup, that's for sure. Poor little girl. My cat had, Bordenolosis? What? I just mumbled.
Yeah, Bartonellosis. Yeah.
Oh, okay. There you go. You managed to figure that out for me. Thank you. And was treated with an antibiotic. Can I contract this illness as a human?
Bartonella is usually a vector-borne disease, so you do not need to worry about Bartonella, contracting Bartonella from your cat.
Okay, there you go. What is that anyway?
It's a blood-borne parasite. A lot of cats will, with Hemobart, they'll come in and they'll look like they're in liver failure. They look like they're jaundiced. And it's actually the parasite attacks the red blood vessel or the red blood cells, and it breaks apart the red blood vessel, blood cells, and it causes that pigment to be released. And so you put them on a medication and or an antibiotic, and it takes care of it. The key is questioning, okay, is this actually a blood-borne disease or is it a liver disease when you see that yellowing of the skin? And it'd be interesting to know from this person if how they knew initially that their cat had Hemobart, if it was just lethargic or if it came in looking yellow.
Okay, text in and let us know. 35270. We'll continue to take your questions. We have about 15 minutes left. If the vet is in, Dr. Doreen Winning is here with us. And we're taking all of your pet questions until 2 o'clock on KFGO. Taking my time on my ride. It Takes Two, Amy Eiler, J.J. Gordon is away. Eric Johnson is filling in for him today, and Dr. Winning is on the line. The vet is in on KFGO.
Yeah, and I'm going to take my turn to hijack a little bit of this hour, Dr. Winning. But I just had a general question. So brought my dog to the lake over the 4th. He's a lab. He loves the water. And I'm just curious if there's any things that I should be aware of when you've got a water dog in the water. I mean, you know, gulping up lake water is a little unavoidable. And he didn't have any negative effects of it. But I just was curious if there are any things that I should be wary of when we get to the lakes country.
Well, the first thing I think about in addition to the water is make sure you have a tick prevention on your dog, because we do see a lot of Lyme disease, especially in those dogs that go to the lake region. So as far as the water goes, depending on the age of the dog and how athletic they are, we've got to start thinking about things like we just talked about. Are they going to be stiff and sore afterwards? What type of water are they swimming in? We do see blue-green algae in certain pools of water that are stagnant. So make sure your dog stays out of those areas that have a lot of algae growth. If it looks pea green, like pea soup, probably not a good idea to swim in. And then also we see probably more this time of year getting into the later months, dogs that have been to the lake a lot, swimmer's tail. And so dogs can sprain their tails because they use them to swim, and it's a constant motion of that tail, and it's getting more resistance in the water than it does air. And so swimmer's tail can be a concern for some dogs as well.
Yeah, I do know that he is absolutely in love with the lake every time we go down there, and thankfully not had any negative effects. But you also notice that he likes to transfer the water from the lake to the yard one bladder load at a time. But really, like, I mean, for a lab, he's an 18-month-old lab. I mean, he would play fetch into the lake all day if I let him.
Yeah.
This time of year is so nice because you have that option to get out and get that exercise, and that's important. So, you know, lakes time is fun for us, but it's also fun for the pets as well.
Another question, Indoor Text Club. My little Darwin has anal gland problems. I can't secrete them myself. Is there anything I should be giving her or feeding her to help with that instead of having to bring her in for it?
Okay, so say that first part of the sentence again. I want to hear that.
Anal gland problems. This person can't secrete them themselves. It says her hind end is so raw. They want to know if they should be feeding her something differently or doing something instead of bringing her in all the time.
So it's so funny because there are some dogs that can have no anal gland problems, never need their anal glands expressed their whole lifetime. And then there are some dogs that constantly, twice a week, you know, the owners feel like they need to bring them in because they're scooting. And so when I see those cases that have chronic anal gland issues, I'm going to be thinking specifically about allergies. So yes, you can do a diet trial to try and see if you can prevent anal gland issues. And I'm talking about infections. Where they have either ruptured anal glands or anal gland infections, food trials can be of some benefit. If it's just a matter of my dog needs them expressed because they're leaking all the time, keep in mind anal glands are meant to secrete their glands, and that's what they're supposed to do. But they're normally supposed to do it when they defecate. So when the dog goes to the bathroom, the glands release and you don't have the release in the house. Some dogs can do it when they're nervous as well. Now, if we start thinking about when they're going to the bathroom, if you increase the fiber in some dogs' diet, that can help express them naturally. So you can look at fibers like pumpkin, adding a tablespoon of canned pumpkin to their meals, or just putting them on a higher fiber food. And you can ask your veterinarian about that because there are some prescription foods that are higher in fiber, but they would not be appropriate for a dog that is thinner. So you just have to talk to your vet about that.
Okay, sounds good. She's got some homework. Mm-hmm. I have a 1-year-old German Shepherd named Nelson that is 100 pounds. Wondering if there's anything I can start doing now to avoid joint hip issues as they are common with the breed.
Mm-hmm. So some of that's in the genetic cards, and you're not going to do anything about that. But let's think about what we can do to improve joint health in general. First thing I think about is fish oil, omega-3 fatty acids, very important. And so I would start supplementing. Nordic Naturals is my go-to. I just love that brand. It's purified, it's mercury-free, and it's quality tested. So fish oil. And then also getting the appropriate amount of exercise. That doesn't need to be for every dog. Some owners will take them for miles and miles and run, and that's fine for some dogs. But if they're younger, you might want to gradually work them up to it. And I know your dog, you said, is, I think it was 1 year old. But if we're talking puppy stages up to that 1.5 years, you have to be a little bit more careful about how much exercise you're getting. And I'm talking, again, people that take their dogs out running miles. You have to be careful in the really young dogs about that. But otherwise, I would say, yes, get them plenty of exercise. Get those muscles very well built up in the hip area.
Someone says, oh, this is the cat that had, how do you say it again? The blood?
Hemobart. Yes. Bartonellosis.
Yep. This person says the cat was very ill with a fever, bloody diarrhea for a week, blood work done and x-rays, was anemic but not jaundice, lab blood sent outside lab to finally get an RBC anomaly results for the parasite. Kitty is doing fine now. Gidget is her name. So.
Oh, how sweet. That's great news. I'm so happy for them. And, you know, some of these diseases, none of the diseases are textbook, it seems like. It's very rare to run into that. And that can be a point of frustration for the veterinarian, but really for the owner, too, because you might have some test results that point to something nonspecific. And then you've got to dig deeper, and that can be hard on the pocketbook and frustrating mentally, because we as humans want to alleviate suffering in our pets. And so it's tough, but I'm glad they got to the bottom of it.
How does a cat demonstrate a fever? Is it in the same way we would?
Yeah, so cats, you know, animals obviously can't tell us if they feel warm or achy. So we start looking for secondary signs, like they're laying around a lot. They're lethargic. They're not wanting to move. Some of them will just not feel like eating. And so when we have, I think I would say lethargy is probably the number one sign where it's going to trigger me. Is this animal running a fever? So think about that. Not as active, might have a fever.
Okay. Sounds good. Someone said they missed the information regarding the anal glands. They have two almost five-month-old Maltese Shih Tzus, and do they need their anal glands cleansed? They're at the groomer today, and they told them not to do it.
I completely agree. Thank you so much, groomers, because so often in the past, you know, we taking our pets to the groomers and the groomers doing their due diligence, you know, express anal glands. And I feel like, you know what, God put anal glands in dogs for whatever reason it was, but why do we have to mess with them? Their job is to secrete as an animal poops, right? So let's not mess with it. I think we can create a lot of problems when we start messing them, you know, expressing them ourselves. So I agree with that groomer. I wouldn't have my dog's anal glands expressed unless I felt there was an issue, like scooting, licking a lot back there.
This person wants to know if your dog, I think they're saying if they're on a HP food. I don't know if they mean, what is that?
So that's a Royal Canin hypoallergenic diet.
Oh, okay. Do you have to be careful if they're on that kind of food when adding fish oil or pumpkin to their diet?
So that would be one that I would put on that diet for a specific period of time, 2 to 3 months, to see if you're seeing an improvement. And I'm assuming this dog has been on this diet for a while, but you're going to want them on that diet for 2 to 3 months to determine if it's helping. And if you think it's helping, you can introduce challenges one at a time. So yeah, start fish oil. Just fish oil and that diet and see if any of those problems return. Skin problems is usually why dogs are on fish oil.
Okay.
But typically.
Sorry, we're running up against the clock here and we took as many questions and we still have more in our text club. So I'm sorry we didn't get to them, but Dr. Winning will be back in August and you will be here August 18th. But in the meantime, how can they get a hold of you at Valley Vet?
We're at 3210 Main Avenue in Fargo, and our phone number is 232-3391. We're online at valleyveterinary.net.
Dr. Winning, thank you so much. What a great show. Thanks for being with us.
Take care.
Is osteoarthritis...